You're listening to Back in the USSR.
Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции. Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы. Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества. Ура!
Thank you.
Welcome, brothers and sisters, comrades and friends to Back in the USSR. I am Siegfried, and I just want to say long live the Syrian Arab Army and long live the Syrian Arab Republic. These are words seldom spoken in Western countries. And quite frankly, it's sinful that they're not. That was actually the Syrian national anthem right there that we had after the Soviet national anthem, which of course we always bring the show in with. Syria is a small, heroic country in Western Asia that since 2011 has withstood 6 years of siege by one of the most powerful US-backed coalitions ever assembled. Turkey, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Israel, France, Britain, the United Arab Emirates, Egypt, Canada, Germany, in fact, just about every country on the planet besides a relatively small number of steadfast anti-imperialist nations, backed the overthrow of the legitimate, democratically elected government of Syria. Tens of thousands of terrorists from more than 100 countries traveled there, equipped with sophisticated American anti-tank missiles, Israeli tactical equipment, and hundreds of tanks drawn from surviving Warsaw Pact military stockpiles in Eastern European NATO states like Bulgaria and Croatia. As well as all manner of weapons and equipment looted from the devastated remnants of Libya. And yet the Syrian government is still in power, 6 years on, and it's winning. Just this past week, the Syrian army, backed by Russian airstrikes, lifted the brutal three-year ISIS siege of the eastern Syrian city of Deir ez-Zor. And already humanitarian convoys are reaching the nearly 100,000 civilians who have been trapped there for more than 36 months. Withstanding non-stop bombardment and incessant attacks from the so-called Islamic State. I've heard the lifting of the siege of Deir ez-Zor being compared with the 1944 lifting of the siege of Leningrad, when the Red Army finally broke through the Nazi lines and ended the horrific ordeal of the people there. And I think it's a very apt comparison to make, and certainly the ordeal of Deir ez-Zor's defenders, who have remained steadfast against overwhelming odds for more than 3 years of battle, will be remembered as one of the greatest epics of gallantry in modern military history. Just listen to this clip of Syrian army soldiers celebrating when the siege was first lifted on September 5th.
الآن على الساتر الترابي هذه هي اللحظات الأولى لالتقاء الجيش العربي السوري أبطال دير الزور والقوات المتقدمة حراس الجمهورية يقابلون قوات العميد سهيل الحسن الآن عند الساتر الترابي في محيط الفوج 137 كما تشاهدون معي
مو ساتر ترابي ساتر النصر
إن شاء الله مبروك النصر مبروك
هذا ساتر النصر لقاء النمور مع الأسود
مبروك مبروك النصر مبروك النصر مجموعات العميد سهيل وينهم؟
مع النوافذ
يا أبو عيسى
قلنا نمور نمور
مع السود
كلمة كلمة قل لي كلمة هلق وصلتوا شو حابب تقول؟
وصلنا كافة أراضي الجمهورية العربية السورية المحررة مثل ما عهدنا سيادة الرئيس دكتور بشار الأسد قادمون قادمون قادمون
للتحرير
آخر رح نوصل لآخر شبر من هاي
الروح بالدم نفديك يا بشار والروح بالدم نفديك يا بشار
لوصول رجال الجيش العربي السوري نعم تم فك الطوق الآن دير الزور تنتصر 3 سنوات من الحصار الإرهابي التقت القوات رفع علم الجمهورية العربية السورية تشاهدون معي في العمق التقاء القوات والعربات المتقدمة من محيط منطقة المجابل إلى الثغرة التي وصل إليها الجيش العربي السوري. تشاهدون أفراح النصر هنا في هذه المنطقة. انتصر الجيش العربي السوري. نعم، ها هم انتقوا الأبطال الآن.
بعد الأمة المقاومة سيد الرئيس بشار الأسد.
الله سوريا بشار وبس. الله سوريا بشار وبس.
الآن الآن يحلق في أجواء دير الزور على ارتفاعات. هذه هي تحية النصر الآن. وعبر شاشة الإخبارية السورية انتصر الجيش العربي السوري. كسر الحصار الظالم والجائر عن دير الزور. الآن دير الزور فتحت القوات طريقها إلى داخل المدينة. التقى الأبطال، التقوا أبطال الحرس الجمهوري، والتقى أبطال قوات العقيد العميد سهيل الحسن الآن هنا عند هذه النقطة. وتم الالتقاء وتم النصر.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. Those were that was from the Syrian Arab News Agency. One of the reporters was there during the lifting of Deir ez-Zor earlier this week, lifting of the siege, and that was celebrating Syrian soldiers right there from the Syrian army who had just been emerged victorious against the so-called Islamic State in eastern Syria and lifted the three-year siege on that city. And this victory is only the latest of many for the Syrian army in 2017. Earlier this year, we witnessed the Syrian army's liberation of the ancient city and UNESCO World Heritage Site of Palmyra from ISIS. And in December 2016, we saw the liberation of Aleppo from terrorist groups that were backed by the CIA and the Pentagon. And all over Syria, operations continue to expel the foreign-backed militants that have been bringing such death and destruction to the country over the past 6 years. Listen to this Press TV news report from when the Syrian army liberated Aleppo.
Now, the Syrian government forces are engaged in a cleanup operation in eastern Aleppo, which was fully cleared of militants on Thursday. Syrian troops have discovered various munitions, including missiles, in the terrorist hideouts. Operations come a day after the evacuation of the last batch of militants from the northern city. Army announced its full liberation, pledging to carry on with anti-terror operations throughout Syria. Anti-Damascus militants seized Aleppo's eastern parts back in 2012.
This is one of the last quarters militants were in before exiting East Aleppo. Press TV team entered their main headquarters. This is one of their command centers in Al-Ansari area. We found tens of armored vehicles, heavy machine guns, and tanks that the militants burned so the Syrian army would not be able to use them.
Since last night we have been combing the area. We found booby-trapped vehicles, motorcycles, mines and filled hospitals. The buildings were filled with explosives. Engineering units dismantled them.
This building used to be a school, but was turned into a prison by militants. They turned classrooms into cells. And here we found a field hospital that was equipped with surgery rooms. This drug had NATO stock written on it, as well as Ministry of Defense, Whitehall, London. It was shocking that in every street there were dozens of warehouses filled with rockets, mortar shells, and ammunition of various types and sizes. This is what the militants call the hell cannon. From here in the eastern parts of Aleppo, militants used to shell the government held side of the city, killing or injuring civilians almost on a daily basis. Cannons were also positioned inside schools. One gas cylinder like this could raise an entire building. Walking the streets, we found dozens of basements filled with foodstuff, some of which were from the United States. The huge amount of weapons and food supplies were clearly enough to help militants fight for years, but eventually they decided to surrender and leave the city. Hamad Ali, Press TV, Eastern Aleppo.
All of downtown Aleppo tonight is filled with people celebrating. It's a huge development, the most significant victory by pro-government forces for the duration of this conflict that's now lasted almost 6 years. But despite the happy faces around me, people chanting in support of the president and the army, of course, it's been an extremely painful journey getting here. Tens of thousands of people have lost their lives. Most of the people living in Aleppo have been displaced. It's estimated that around 50% of the population have been forced to leave the city, and of course much of the city has been destroyed. Now, I've spent months in Aleppo in the last year, and I haven't really met anybody here that hasn't been affected by the war. Many parents have lost their children. Many children have been left orphans by this conflict.
أبوي ميت صار له 5 أيام.
أنت شفتهم عم بقتلوا أهله؟
إيه.
وين عائلتهم؟
ميتين كله. ضربوهم قذيف المسلحين.
But something struck me today. We left Sheikh Saeed early this morning, just hours after it was retaken by pro-government forces. And there we met a man, a soldier, who wasn't involved in the battle to take Sheikh Saeed, but he was there returning to his home. It was almost as though he was waiting for the second that he could safely return to his home, even though that he knew that it had been destroyed. And that's really the sense that I get from many people here, that once they've done with their celebrations, that they are eagerly waiting to rebuild their homes, their families, and of course their city.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. Those were two reports right there from when Aleppo was liberated from terrorist groups in December of last year by the Syrian Arab Army. And one of them was by, the first one was by Muhammad Ali, who was the Press TV correspondent covering the battle in Aleppo. And you see some of the things he found in when he was touring some of these areas were recently liberated from terrorist groups. He was finding weapons and equipment that were Western made. Like he was finding like American foodstuffs in the hands of the terrorists, like they'd obviously been supplied by them. You know, he found British medical supplies there. He found all kinds of things. And, you know, all this sort of stuff, like, was very, you know, it was very clear, like, how supported these terrorists were from abroad. And I'm going to talk more about that later, because that is definitely something that needs to be talked about and never lost sight of when we talk about the war in Syria, how much foreign support there was for these militant groups in the country. And of course, the second report I played was from Lizzie Fallon, who's a British journalist who reported for RT during the conflict and still does, I believe. And she was covering the street celebrations that happened in Aleppo when the news broke that the eastern parts of the city had been liberated. Now, the fight for liberation in Syria, the fight to liberate the country from the various militant groups, from the terrorists, from the foreign-supported, the foreign-backed terrorists, was and remains brutally hard. And Syria has lost much, to say the least. Listen to this report by Muhammad Ali, also by Muhammad Ali, the Press TV journalist, from March of this year, when the Syrian army liberated Palmyra, which, as I said before, was a UNESCO World Heritage Site that was almost completely wrecked by the so-called Islamic State.
The Palmyra is fully under the control of the Syrian army. Of course, we are now in the ancient city of Palmyra. If you can see behind me, you can see in the picture the ancient city of Palmyra. Now the Syrian army is actually carrying out intensive military operations in the outskirts and in the countryside of Palmyra in order to chase down Daesh terrorists who fled away just 2 days ago when the Syrian army entered the city. Of course, the military strikes are targeting Daesh terrorists and chasing them down in an area called Al Salami' and towards in the direction, of course, of Al Sikhne. Those areas are to the east of the city of Palmyra. Of course, we are standing just before the ancient amphitheater of Palmyra, and we will just now be entering as we speak to this amphitheater. Of course, we know that Daesh terrorists inflicted heavy losses on ancient city. Many parts of the ancient city were damaged because of Daesh terrorists, particularly and primarily in December. This is the amphitheater. I'm going to ask the cameraman to enter to the amphitheater and film over there inside so our viewers can see the damage caused by Daesh terrorists in December in that, of course, amphitheater. We are now at the facade of the amphitheater, or what we can call it as the stage. Of course, over here, here the damage is definitely very clear, and there's huge damage over here on the stage due to the explosives set by Daesh terrorists. And as we speak, of course, there are still calming operations as the Syrian army, along with the Russian forces on the ground, are calming the streets and the residential areas of the modern city of Palmyra, because there are still lots of explosives and mines set by Daesh terrorists before leaving the city. As usual, this is of course not a surprising point. However, the Syrian army continues to dismantle those explosive devices. And now we're going to exit now the amphitheater, the ancient amphitheater. Just behind it, of course, there are several also ancient parts of the city of Palmyra. We're speaking here about some UNESCO World Heritage also areas, like the columns here that were also targeted by Daesh. Now we're going to go to behind this amphitheater in order to show you the also damages caused by Daesh, in which there were many explosive devices used to raise those columns. Now, at the end, of course, of this corridor over here, the cameraman can zoom in. You can see the columns that have been destroyed and raised to the ground. Definitely a lot of damage has been inflicted by Daesh terrorists on the ancient city where we are. In December, Daesh committed those acts when they were in control of the city. Now, the most important point now is that the Syrian army is planning to perhaps renovate and repair the damages, not just here in the ancient city, but also in the modern city of Palmyra. We're expecting the governor of Homs to be arriving here in the ancient city in order to assess the damages and perhaps see how they can, the Syrian government, of course, repair the infrastructure, at least at the beginning, and then the residential areas.
So you're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Press TV's Muhammad Ali reporting on the extent of the damage in the ancient city of Palmyra, the damage that was inflicted by the so-called Islamic State when they occupied that area before they were driven out by the Syrian army back in March of this year. And of course, many, many archaeological sites, UNESCO World Heritage sites in Syria and Iraq have been devastated during this conflict, but during this war. Very deliberately destroyed by the so-called Islamic State, which has actually deliberately targeted these sites and will take a huge amount of effort to restore places like Palmyra to the extent they can be restored after the destruction they've experienced. And to illustrate still further what the Syrian people are up against in this struggle for survival they've been engaged in for the past 6 years, against foreign-backed militants attacking them, besieging their country, I'm going to play another report from Muhammad Ali. This one from back in January, when the Syrian army liberated the Wadi Barada Valley near Damascus, freeing it from terrorist groups who had cut off the Syrian capital's water supply, and thus effectively held millions of people hostage. Before this area was finally liberated, and the springs which fed Damascus's water supply were recaptured by the Syrian army, and the terrorists were driven out. So I'll play that report right now. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Now, the Syrian army has taken full control of the Wadi Barada Valley near the capital, Damascus. The area has been the scene of fierce fighting in recent weeks. A military offensive launched last month aimed partly to seize control of a major spring and a water pumping station, which supplies most of the capital's water. Our correspondent Muhammad Ali visited the liberated area and filed this report for us.
Over a month of heavy fighting resulted in the defeat of terrorists in Wadi Barda Valley, west of Damascus. The natural water-rich area has been under control of terrorists since 2013. The army started an offensive there after terrorists cut water supplies to Damascus. They were besieged and decided to surrender.
The terrorists were forced to leave Ain al-Figa and the entire valley after we entered the town from the east, west and north. They had no option but to escape.
Armed men who decided to reconcile and stay were granted amnesty. Others who refused started exiting out to Idlib. They set ablaze their hideouts before leaving Barda Valley. This is the water facility of Ain al-Fija Spring. Maintenance teams directly entered and started work for repairing the damages. In December 2016, terrorists blew up many parts of this water facility here in Ain al-Fija town west of Damascus, depriving millions of Syrians of drinking water. But now, thanks to the Syrian army, water will be restored to the capital. Almost all of the facility's electronic and technical installations were detonated by terrorists, including some of the pumps. The Syrian army was able to defuse many explosive devices set by the terrorists before they left. Despite that, officials say water will reach the capital instantly.
Wadi Barda pumping line is totally destroyed. Part of Ain Fija water will be delivered directly as an emergency measure to Damascus until all damages are repaired.
By controlling more areas around Damascus, the Syrian army is enhancing security around the city and preventing terrorist attacks. According to government sources, focus will be laid now on securing eastern Al-Ghouta towns. Muhammad Ali, Press TV, Ain al-Fija, Damascus countryside.
Okay, listening to Back in USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Muhammad Ali's Press TV report earlier this year from back in January, describing how the Syrian army liberated the Wadi Barada Valley and thus secured Damascus's water supply, which had been cut off by terrorist groups. Now, for the Syrian people who have suffered and endured so much, victory is finally in sight. You know, it looks like in the next 12 months, the war finally will draw to a close, given the victories that have been won and the defeats inflicted upon different terrorist groups. Victory is finally in sight for the Syrian people. And that's something that should be celebrated. And yet the Western media continues to do what it has done from the start. Right from the start of the conflict. And that is demonize the legitimate government of Syria, make false accusations about the use of chemical weapons, whitewash the brutal actions of the terrorist groups fighting against the government, and go all out encouraging Western military intervention against a sovereign nation on so-called humanitarian grounds. And thus the media reveals itself to be just as much a part of the war on Syria as the Pentagon, the CIA, the U.S. State Department, and all the state and non-state actors who have brought nothing but terror and death to what was once a peaceful nation. Well, I want to get the record straight tonight. Long live the Syrian people and victory to the Syrian Arab army. Your long march is finally coming to a close. And I want to say solidarity with you. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
It's a song that encapsulates exactly why the struggle has went on so long, and we have endured, and we have came out the other side, so near to victory. The higher you build your barriers, the taller I become. The more that you take my rights away, the faster I will. You can't deny me, you can't decide to turn your face away. No matter, 'cause there's something inside the storm. I know that I can make it, but you're doing me wrong, so wrong. And if I'm in my pride is gone, oh no, there's something inside the storm. There's something inside so strong. The more you refuse to hear my voice, so brightly it's gonna blind you, 'cause there's something inside the storm. I know that I can make it, but you do me wrong, so wrong. And if I'm in my pride is gone, oh no, there's something inside the storm. Something inside so strong. Sing, brothers and sisters, when the insist for you to stop getting up. Oh, but we know better. We're gonna look them in the eyes and we'll say, we're gonna do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway. 'Cause there's something inside so strong. You're doing me wrong, so wrong. And you thought that my pride is gone. Oh no, there's something inside so strong. Something inside so strong. Something inside so strong. There's something inside so strong. Thanks very much, President. Cheers.
الروح غالي لالي لالي. العالي غالي 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 اسمك يا وطننا يا غالي تحت جناح وانا بتفيا انا سوري طبياني يا لي هي 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 هي
يا عالم ملالي بالعالي غالي 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 نسرق يا وطننا غالي تحت جناحه انا بتفيا انا سوري اغياني يالي
انا سوري انا عربي انا سوري انا عربي انا عربي اغياني يالي
You're listening to Back in the USSR. You're on 93.3 FM CFRU. And those were a couple of songs in tribute to the Syrian people and the Syrian army for their heroic resistance against imperialism. The first one was Gary Ogg, Something Inside So Strong, originally written in tribute to the people of Ireland resisting British imperialism. A song which I believe was actually written by prisoners in British jails. Irish political prisons in British jails in the 1980s, if I recall. And the second song was Hussein al-Dik with Ana Suri, Ana Arabi, which is a song in tribute to the Syrian Arab Army. Now, and of course, Syria is not alone in being a really heroic nation fighting against, at great cost, fighting heroically against imperialist forces attempting to crush it. We saw the same thing in Vietnam. We saw the same thing in Nicaragua in the 1980s. We saw the same thing in Cuba since the revolution happened in 1959. And we've seen it in other places as well. The heroic people of a nation fighting to defend their self-determination. And that's really what's going on in Syria. Of course, the Western media will do all it can to obfuscate that truth. But that's really what the Syrian people and the Syrian army have been doing since 2011. They've been fighting to survive, and they've succeeded. And now they're going to rebuild their nation on their own terms. Now, I've talked about the Syrian conflict on a number of occasions on this show. And a few weeks ago, I played an interview that journalist Max Blumenthal did with the Real News Network, in which he unpacked a lot of the media deception surrounding Syria, and in particular, how some Western leftists and progressives have ended up disgracefully siding with the U.S.-led project of regime change in Syria. Even people who in the past vehemently opposed the Iraq war when George Bush was in power. But when Obama was in power and he attacked places like Libya, he attacked places like Syria, they were behind him. They supported him. And this includes people like Amy Goodman, who will actually be giving a talk very soon in Guelph. And I have to say, regardless of whatever her progressive credentials are in America, her reporting on Syria has been abysmal. Just abysmal. Sickening, even. Just repeating mainstream media lies about chemical weapons and alleged atrocities without giving a critical perspective or any sort of counterpoint. Uncritically interviewing members of the Western-based Members of the Western-based Syrian opposition, who like the Western-based Iraqi opposition before them in 2003, openly call for U.S. military intervention to oust a legitimate government of a sovereign state. And just by generally being pro-imperialist, I mean, she's basically had a pro-imperialist message on Syria since the conflict began. And this is supposed to be alternative media that she's producing on Democracy Now. It's really disgusting. And she and her collaborators should be ashamed. But, of course, they're far from alone. Even leftist political organizations, some of whom still dare to call themselves socialist, after spouting this pro-imperialist claptrap, have jumped on the regime change bandwagon since 2011. I'd like to share with you this one article from the Grenville Post, which not only exposes how the CIA, you know, American intelligence organizations, have backed up some of the most murderous rebel groups in Syria, but how some pseudo-leftist groups, like the ISO, ended up as stooges of American foreign policy. And I think this article is quite illuminating, so I'm just going to pull that up right here. This article is entitled "The Abandonment of the CIA's Syrian Rebels and the Pseudo-Left Accomplices of U.S. Imperialism." It's by Bill Van Auken from August 7, 2017. Once again, from the Grenville Post. And it goes like this. A revealing article published in the New York Times provides a glimpse of the debate within the U.S. state and its military intelligence apparatus that led to last month's decision by the Trump administration to pull the plug on the CIA's regime change operation in Syria. The Times account paints the CIA's dirty war to oust Syria's President Bashar al-Assad through the arming, training, and funding of Sunni sectarian militias linked to al-Qaeda as an unmitigated fiasco. It reports that the U.S. government spent more than $1 billion over the life of the program to provide weapons and even pay the salaries of the so-called rebels. Codenamed Timber Sycamore, the CIA regime change operation was formally launched in June of 2013. In reality, the agency had been active in Syria for years. In the wake of the U.S. NATO war's toppling of the Libyan government and the assassination of its leader Muammar Gaddafi, the CIA created a rat line to funnel both arms, stockpiles, and Islamist fighters into Syria to launch a vicious sectarian war. The Times describes the CIA program as, quote, one of the most expensive efforts to arm and train rebels since the agency's program arming the Mujahideen in Afghanistan in the 1980s. It catalogs the ostensible disasters wrought by the CIA's barely covert intervention, including much of the CIA's weapons funneled into Syria having ended up in the hands of a rebel group tied to al-Qaeda, i.e. the al-Nusra Front. In relation to Syria, International Viewpoint and the ISO, Achkar and Smith, lambasted the Obama administration for failing to provide sufficient support for the Syrian, quote, revolution. They insisted after Russia began providing air support to the forces of the Assad government that the CIA arm the rebels with anti-aircraft missiles. You know, this is a socialist organization saying that the reactionary rebels should be armed with anti-aircraft missiles. Quote, since CIA-trained fighters crossed into Syria, CIA officers had difficulty controlling them, according to the Times article. The fact that some of their CIA weapons ended up with al-Nusra Front and that some of the rebels joined the group confirmed the fears of many in the Obama administration when the program began. Although the al-Nusra Front was widely seen as an effective fighting force against Mr. Assad's troops, its al-Qaeda affiliation made it impossible for the Obama administration to provide direct support for the group. This was hardly a mere mishap, given that the Nusra Front, along with the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS, constituted the backbone of the armed anti-Assad forces, and the CIA's supposedly vetted and moderate rebels fought in close alliance with these Islamist militias. The Times chooses its words carefully when it notes that the al-Qaeda affiliation of the al-Nusra Front made it impossible for the Obama administration to provide direct support for the group. Instead, the vetted rebels served as a conduit for arms that Washington knew would wind up with the Syrian al-Qaeda affiliate and its spinoff ISIS. Citing U.S. intelligence estimates, the Times reports that the Nusra Front now has as many as 20,000 fighters in Syria, making it al-Qaeda's largest affiliate. This represents the principal achievement secured by the CIA with its 1 billion weapons program. The article likewise notes that the White House, quote, also achieved periodic reports that the CIA-trained rebels had summarily executed prisoners and committed other violations of the rules of armed conflict. This is a delicate way of describing the beheading of children, sectarian massacres, the parading of members of religious minorities in cages, mass executions, and the terrorizing of entire civilian populations. The CIA orchestrated war for regime change reached its high watermark in 2015, threatening Aleppo, Idlib, Latakia, and Hama provinces in the north, as well as Homs in the center of the country and areas of Damascus and other provinces in the south. The result was a bloodbath that claimed the lives of hundreds of thousands and turned millions into refugees. In response, Russia offered military assistance to the Syrian government, providing air cover for a counteroffensive that ultimately drove the Islamist fighters back and wrested from them their last significant urban foothold in eastern Aleppo in December of last year. The victory of the government forces was a result not merely of Russian firepower, but more decisively the hostility towards the reactionary Islamist rebels of broad layers of the population that came to see the Assad regime, its repression and corruption notwithstanding, as the lesser evil. Note that the editor objects and dissents from the gratuitous vilification of Bashar al-Assad's government in this reporting. The Times article makes clear that Trump's decision to end the CIA program in Syria, taken on the recommendations of his CIA director Mike Pompeo, as well as senior military officials, was the end result of a protracted and bitter debate within the White House and the U.S. military intelligence apparatus that began under the Obama administration. Opponents of the program within the U.S. state condemned the operation as, quote, foolhardy, expensive, and ineffective, the Times reports, while its supporters say it was unnecessarily cautious and that its achievements were remarkable, given that the Obama administration had so many restrictions on it from the start, which they say ultimately ensured its failure. Among these supporters, according to the Times, was John Brennan, Obama's last CIA director, who remained a vigorous defender of the program despite divisions within the spy agency about the effort's effectiveness. Also pushing the CIA's program were foreign backers, including Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, whose government has long sought Syria's dismemberment. The Times article serves to shed considerable light on the political activities of a group of organizations and publications presenting themselves as socialists and leftists, which promoted the CIA regime change operation as a Syrian revolution, quote-unquote, that deserved unqualified support. Prominent among these layers have been International Viewpoint, the publication of Pabluit United Secretariat, and its principal spokesman on the Middle East, Gilbert Achkar, a professor at the School of Oriental and African Studies at the University of London. Also a leading propagandist for the CIA's Syrian revolution, has been the International Socialist Organization and its chief spokesman on the Syrian developments, Ashley Smith. These figures and others, such as the Left Party in Germany and the new anti-capitalist party in France, waged an international campaign to drum up support for the imperialist orchestrated war to oust the Assad government, appealing in the name of, quote, human rights, to a middle-class milieu of liberals and ex-lefts. They resolutely supported the right of the Syrian, quote, revolutionaries, in reality Islamists on the CIA payroll, to receive arms, training, and funds from the U.S. intelligence agency, and even to appeal for direct U.S. imperialist intervention in Syria. Achcar pioneered this approach by stridently supporting the U.S.-NATO war for regime change in Libya, insisting that, quote, anti-imperialist principles had to take a backseat to humanitarian concerns for the Libyan people. Achcar and his allies provided a pseudo-left justification for a war that claimed the lives of over 30,000 Libyans and has left the country nearly 6 years later in a state of utter chaos and devastation. In relation to Syria, International Viewpoint and the ISO, Achcar and Smith, lambasted the Obama administration for failing to provide sufficient support for the, quote, Syrian revolution. They insisted after Russia began providing air support to the forces of the Assad government that the CIA arm the rebels with anti-aircraft missiles. Aside from concerns that placing such weapons in the hands of the CIA-backed forces could trigger a military confrontation between the U.S. and Russia, the world's two major nuclear powers, elements in the U.S. state apparatus also justifiably feared that they would end up in the hands of Al-Qaeda and could, sooner rather than later, be turned against the U.S. itself. Thus, last September, Smith wrote angrily in the ISO's Socialist Worker that the Obama administration, quote, preferred to cut deals with Russia rather than take any action that might topple Assad, and had, quote, refused to supply the FSA, Free Syrian Army, the fictitious label applied to the collection of Islamist militias, with weapons it pleaded for to defend itself against regime airstrikes. In the final analysis, these positions represented political support for the faction within the U.S. state apparatus, led by the likes of Brennan, the career CIA official implicated in countless crimes, from torture to drone assassinations to the mass killings in the Middle East, that was demanding an escalation of the regime change operation. This support was not merely platonic. Achcar, who is cited as an ally and an authority by elements like the ISO and Jacobin magazine, lent his expertise to the collection of U.S. and French intelligence assets that comprised the Syrian National Council, counseling them on the most effective way to lobby for Western military intervention. These pseudo-left figures and organizations function as what amount to specialized NGOs, acting much like the National Endowment for Democracy and its constituent elements, as political fronts and facilitators for the CIA and U.S. imperialism. Their politics reflect the social interests of privileged layers of the upper middle class, whose wealth and privileges are bound up with the processes of financial parasitism that have driven up stock prices and real estate values. The pseudo-left has worked to recruit this social strata as a new constituency for imperialism based on phony human rights appeals. While the Trump administration has wound up the already failed CIA regime change operation in Syria, U.S. imperialism has by no means ended its intervention. On the contrary, the Pentagon has deployed U.S. troops on the ground and has armed, funded, and trained other proxy forces, including the so-called Syrian Democratic Forces, dominated by the Kurdish YPG militia in the north, as well as Sunni elements in the south. The U.S. military has made it clear that it intends to establish permanent bases in the country and carve out its own sphere of influence as part of the broader struggle to militarily assert U.S. hegemony over the Middle East. The escalation of the U.S. military intervention, which found expression last April with the firing of 59 cruise missiles on a Syrian airbase, has only elicited demands from the pseudo-lefts for more. Responding to the U.S. attack for the ISO, Ashley Smith lamented that, quote, the U.S. only attacked the one base and didn't even blow up its runway. He went on to note Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's statement that Washington was no longer seeking Assad's ouster, declaring that, quote, the U.S. thus proved itself no ally of the Syrian revolution. It has turned a blind eye while Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah intervened in support of Assad's counter-revolutionary war to save his dictatorship. Rather than a blind eye, clearly the ISO wants a more aggressive U.S. military response, a position that once again reflects the attitude of substantial layers of the U.S. political establishment and its military and intelligence apparatus. So that was the Greenville Post. And as you can see, disgracefully, we see that certain people who call themselves leftists and progressives have effectively drunk the Kool-Aid provided to them by the mainstream media, by the U.S. government, and effectively are pushing for regime change in Syria. Even some people who opposed regime change when it was during the Iraq War. And this is a very dangerous thing. The fact that this can happen. And it can sweep up so many people. People who call themselves socialist but end up supporting the agenda of the CIA, the Pentagon. And the imperialist aspirations of the American government in the Middle East. Now, that was horrific in Libya, that was horrific in Syria. In both cases, you had these types of people supporting these phony leftists, supporting these kinds of military interventions, supporting regime change. And that basically is unforgivable. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.